KOIN Portland. It's 11 o'clock.
CBS News. Security is being tightened at airports and other public transportation facilities in New York 3 nights after that bombing at LaGuardia Airport. This is Doug Poling reporting on the CBS radio network. Police say they still have only one slim lead in trying to find the person or persons who planted a bomb in a locker at the airport, killing 11 people and wounding 75 others. They are hoping for some contact from a woman who reportedly overheard two men trying to place a warning phone call shortly before the explosion. Meanwhile, the agency which operates many transportation terminals in the New York area is taking extra precautions. A report from Walt Wheeler of station WCBS New York.
The Port Authority bus terminal has sealed its 2008 coin-operated lockers. Grand Central and Penn Station are securing theirs, perhaps 1,000 or more. Kennedy, LaGuardia, and Newark airports have turned their 10,000 lockers to the walls. And why? Port Authority Police Lieutenant Frank Karsich says it's to discourage bombers.
Anyone who was going to put any kind of a device in a locker would have second thoughts about having to do it in person. In other words, to leave a package and there is a face-to-face contact, which probably would scare him off. In all probably, I would say definitely, it would scare him off.
Even New York City's subway lockers have been ordered searched, though subway police say they haven't been ordered to seal them up yet. Transportation and baggage industry sources say that if Washington didn't actually order the closings, federal officials did at least suggest them very strongly. So far, it's not clear if the new security moves extend beyond this area. Walt Wheeler for CBS News, New York.
More news in a moment.
Give your hand to a friend. Give your heart to your love. Give your code to contact the sooner the better.
The most successful selling cold medicine in the world is a little capsule. It's Contact. It contains no ingredients for aches and fever, no cough medicine, yet gives you longer relief per dose than any pill, any liquid. Full-time 24-hour relief of your sneezing, drips, and congestion. Contact. Its tiny time pills contain ingredients to work up to 12 hours. That's longer relief per dose from those symptoms than any pill, any liquid. So, give your cold a Contact. All day, all night. Full-time.
Give your cold.
Use only as directed.
Both the White House and the State Department have denied as totally without foundation a published report saying about 300 Americans are now fighting in Angola. The Christian Science Monitor reports that the Americans were trained, at least indirectly, by the CIA. The Monitor says these Americans have joined forces with the two anti-Soviet movements fighting in Angola. President Ford worked for several hours on New Year's Day. He met for 3 hours with his advisors to discuss the budget. The president also signed 14 bills and vetoed one. Among those measures signed by the president was one authorizing the federal government to pay state and local governments for the cost of guarding foreign missions and diplomats. The president rejected a measure which would have made the Secretary of the Treasury a member of the National Security Council. Mr. Ford said that was not needed. Some hospitals in California are now turning away all but the most serious emergency cases. Doctors in Southern California Thursday began a work slowdown. They are protesting soaring rates for malpractice insurance, up over 400% in some cases. A severe blizzard is hampering travel in several Midwestern states. The National Weather Service says it's a strong and extensive storm. Up to 19 inches of snow fell in parts of Wyoming and Nebraska. The Soviet Union has denied that it has been cheating on arms control agreements with the United States. An article in the Soviet Communist Party newspaper Pravda accuses American critics of trying to block further agreements. Pravda says the arms talks with the U.S. are too serious and too vitally important to be used for selfish purposes. Now this.
Of 576, New York 10016. That's Box 576, New York 10016.
Three big college football bowl games were played New Year's Day. A big surprise took place at the Rose Bowl in Pasadena, California, when the Bruins of UCLA upset Ohio State 23-10. In the Cotton Bowl at Dallas, Arkansas beat Georgia 31-10. And at Miami in the Orange Bowl, Oklahoma defeated Michigan 14-6. This is Doug Poling, CBS News.
In Radio 97 News, President Ford has signed the Hell's Canyon Bill, ending decades of controversy over the canyon which forms part of the boundary between this state and Idaho. President put his signature on the bill on New Year's Eve. Legislation sets aside a vast area of the canyon as a national recreational area. Oregon Senator Bob Packwood was quite pleased. He said at the signing, and we quote, "The president's bill will save Hell's Canyon from den building forever." A lot of happy people about that. Explosives of an unknown nature destroyed a telephone booth in northwest Portland shortly after the new year started, but no injuries. Portland police, who continue to investigate the incident, said the glass in the booth was completely shattered. Some pieces of the glass were found as far as a block away. Cottage Grove man was shot to death early this morning at a New Year's party near Cresswell. Lane County Sheriff's Office reports it is holding a 24-year-old Cresswell man, Dennis Davies, on a charge of murder in connection with the death of a 22-year-old Richard Gines. Davies is being held without bail pending arraignment in district court tomorrow. Teresa Seymour, the little 11-year-old girl who survived a plane crash along with her little puppy near Klamath Falls over a week ago, attended a funeral in Washington State today. The crash she survived killed Teresa's mother, stepfather, and half-sister. They were all killed. Family was en route to Natchez, Washington, to visit Teresa's grandparents when that fatal crash happened. By the end of January, Oregon should be in compliance with a federal law requiring removal of billboards from beside major highways. State Highway Division's officials say the program to buy the signs or remove those put up since 1965 without compensation has gone well. E.E. Becker says about 3,100 signs will remain legally. Most will be within city boundaries. Oregon will probably beat all the other states because of some legal problems in Maine. That state, too, has had an aggressive program of removing billboards from the countryside near interstate and primary highways. In Radio 97 Sports, Paul Brown resigned tonight as head coach of the Cincinnati Bengals. He was 67 years old. And the weather calls for clear and cold weather tonight, possibly some rain by tomorrow night because of increasing clouds setting in. High tomorrow in the low 40s, low tonight in the mid-20s. At 11:08, you're up to the minute with Coin 97 News. I'm Tom Morgan.
The CBS Radio Mystery Theater presents... G. Marshall. In Shakespeare's play, Hamlet asks the question, to be or not to be. For hundreds of years, thinking men have tried to define precisely what we mean by those words, to be or not to be. Because there are times when the line between being and not being, the distinction between what some of us call life and death, is such a thin line that it is difficult to say whether at some particular point a human being actually is or is not.
Why did you throw your life away, Jerry?
I did no such thing.
You were young, handsome, intelligent, a good father, a good husband. But no more. No more. Now you're a hero. A dead hero.
No, I don't believe you, Marion.
You don't want to believe me. Open your eyes. Wide. If you can. Now. Tell me what you see.
Nothing. Everything's black. I see nothing.
Then admit it, Jerry.
Admit what?
The simple fact that you are dead. The fact that you are buried. The fact that I am up here, your widow, kneeling now in sorrow at your grave.
Our mystery drama, One of the Missing, was especially adapted from the Ambrose Bierce classic for the Mystery Theater by Stella and Arnold Moss. It stars Christopher Tabori. It is sponsored in part by Buick Motor Division and True Value Hardware Stores. I'll be back shortly with Act One.
Buick's 1976 Century Regal is the most luxurious midsize car Buick builds. But it's also got a practical side. In fact, it makes a concession to practicality that no other American midsize car does. It comes with a V6 engine, and a Buick V6 at that. Regal, it's got the spirit.
Helping hand now can help prevent a handout in the future. How? Hundreds of American Indian children become grade school dropouts simply because their families can't afford to buy them a pair of shoes, a warm coat, a dress or shirt, or eyeglasses. People always say how good the American Indians are with their hands. Give them a chance to show what they can do with their minds. Send your contribution to Futures for Children, Box 14204, Albuquerque, 87109.
Here's a tip from your Better Business Bureau on the metric system. You know, use of the metric system as a uniform system of measurement in this country is growing rapidly. But of course, you want to know how it will affect you, right? Well, take driving your car, for example. The kilometer will replace the mile in expressing distances. Right now, 1 mile is equal to 1,760 yards or 5,280 feet. Now, isn't it easier to remember that 1 kilometer is equal to 1,000 meters? Your car's speedometer will also change from miles per hour to kilometers per hour. So will speed limit signs on the highways. And again, the standard unit of measure will be the meter. And so when you order a tank full of gas, the liquid measure will be in liters, not gallons. For example, a fill-up of 16 gallons is equal to 60 liters. For more information on the metric system, write to Metric Information Office, National Bureau of Standards, Washington, D.C.
It's an insufferably hot day near the end of June. The year is 1864. The place, Northern Georgia, in the shadow of an 1,800-foot elevation called Kennesaw Mountain. The Confederate Army has stopped here in retreat from the advancing troops of the Union General William Tecumseh Sherman. In his tent, a Union captain speaks.
Private Searing?
Sir.
And you are Private Daniel Ransom?
Yes, sir, I am.
You know our position, Searing?
Well, I'm not sure, sir, but there's been talk in the ranks that we're getting close to Atlanta.
Not more than 20 miles.
Yes, sir.
You both know what the fall of Atlanta will mean to us, Ransom.
I think I do, sir. It could mean the end of the war.
We've been ordered to advance upon the enemy, leave him no quarter, no time to rest or to reassemble his troops. General McPherson is a cautious man.
We know that, sir.
He's not content to obey an order blindly without knowing exactly and specifically what's in front of him. He wants the most complete, the most detailed intelligence possible, and I've been ordered to get it. That's where you two soldiers come in.
Yes, sir.
We believe the enemy to be in a strong position. You are to pass our own picket lines, travel through the forest, and get as near to the enemy's lines as you possibly can.
And learn all that we can. Is that correct, sir?
Exactly, Searing. One last word. The outcome of this long, bloody war may well depend on our success or failure in taking Atlanta.
We understand that, sir. When do we start?
Immediately. If you accomplish this mission this day, the 30th day of June, 1864, may well go down as one of the most important dates in the history of our country. Good luck to you both.
In no time at all, Ransom and I were creeping stealthily forward on our hands and knees, past our own men in blue on picket duty, lying in groups of two and four behind little banks of red earth. Dan, it's got so quiet and peaceful.
All of a sudden, Jerry. How do you explain it?
Got no idea.
How much further do you figure we have to go?
No way of telling yet. Why?
I don't know. Maybe I'm a little afraid. I don't think I'm quite ready to die. Not just yet.
Oh, now, you've never been afraid of anything in your whole life. Any more than I have.
Hey, but this is different. Why is it all so quiet?
Just keep your eyes and ears open. Look for everything. Listen for everything. And take your time.
Yeah. It's slow going.
Oh, we'll get there. Hey, wait a minute. Flatten yourself down. Low as you can get. And don't move.
What is it? What do you see? What do you hear?
Take a look through that narrow opening in the bushes. And you tell me. Tell me what you see, Dan.
A little mound of yellow clay. Not more than 10 feet from here.
You know what it is, don't you?
Of course. It's one of their rifle pits.
Where are the men?
Be careful, Jerry.
Don't worry.
Jerry, what are you doing?
Look over there, Dan. Two boys in gray, sitting with their backs, leaning against that sycamore tree.
What do we do?
We'll capture them, Dan. You and I capture them.
You're fast asleep.
The captain never counted on this. Information from two prisoners of war. You cover the one on the left. I'll cover the other one.
All right.
Oh, Johnny Reb. The war's gonna be over for you.
On your feet. Hands over your head.
They don't hear you.
Get up off your bottoms before I...
What is it?
They're not asleep, Dan. They're dead. Come on, let's get moving.
Hey, you'll get your head pulled off. Keep down. There may be some live ones about.
Are you coming? Dan, look at this rifle pit. Nobody. There's been nobody in this pit for the last couple of hours. But same's true for that pit over here. And this one. No, no, Dan. It's just the two of us.
Where do you suppose they've gone?
I'm not sure. But I'll tell you one thing. We're damn well going to find out. Pushed across the line of abandoned rifle pits, running from one cover to another in the open forest, looking into every conceivable hiding place to discover any possible stragglers. Not a soul. The enemy was gone. After a while, we came to the edge of a plantation. One of those forlorn, deserted homesteads, upgrown by now with brambles, ugly broken fences, and desolate with blank openings where there once were doors and windows. Watch your step, Dan. You can't tell what might be in there.
Could be a trap.
No, I don't think so. We're not going to take any chances.
How long do you figure we've been out?
Well, not as long as it feels. We can't have come too far. We're still alive. Dan, look over there.
A little building?
What is it? Oh, what was it? Looks like a single room sitting on top of four high posts.
Yeah, about 10 feet off of the ground.
What do you say we take a look? Be a fine place to get a good peek at the country from all angles. And maybe find out the direction they took when they withdrew. Keep your rifle steady, just in case.
Hey, this little shack has certainly taken a beating.
It's hardly more than a roof on stilts.
Most of the flooring has fallen away.
The joists, the planks, just rotten away.
Looks as if the whole thing would go down at the touch of a finger.
If we move slowly, I think we can get to the top there without anything happening. I think it will bear our weight.
Careful now, Jerry. Here we go.
Give me a hand, Dan.
There we are.
You all right?
Fine. Here, take my field glasses.
Let's come up. No. Dan, will you take a look at that?
Where?
That way. They can't be more than half a mile away. There must be thousands of them on that narrow road.
It's their rear guard covering their retreat. See how their gun barrels gleam in the morning sunlight?
They're heading south, towards that river. That could be the next stand.
Well, we'd better get back to our command as fast as we can and report what we found.
Oh, wait a minute. I was just thinking. That's a temptation, a real big temptation.
What are you talking about?
You remember Missionary Ridge?
I wasn't there.
Confederate lines were extended all the way from the ridge, straight across the whole Chattanooga Valley, all the way to Lookout Mountain. Just the way they are down there.
Jerry, we've got to get back.
Long gray columns of Confederates slogging down the other side of that mountain road, almost exactly the way they're toiling up this one. And there was this heavy gun of theirs.
On top of the mountain?
It had been throwing charge after charge of grape at us. When we got to it, the cannon was still hot. Ammunition, right behind it.
Jerry, that's all very well, but...
I looked into that round, brazen ring of its muzzle, and I knew what I had to do. One last parting shot at them. A peck of iron from their own gun as they swarmed down the mountainside like so many ants.
And did you?
Just as I'm about to do right now. Why, you should have seen them scatter. Doesn't the sight of those Rebs tempt you, Danny?
To do what?
All I have to do is take this beautiful Springfield rifle of mine, put it to my shoulder like this.
Jerry, what are you doing?
With this old globe sight and this hair trigger, all I have to do is take careful aim, press the trigger ever so gently. Ever so gently.
Jerry, put that down. You'll have the whole enemy army down on the two of us.
Easiest thing in the world to send an ounce and a quarter of lead hissing right through into their midst.
Are you out of your mind, Jerry? Put that gun down.
It's the business of a soldier to kill.
Not now, Jerry. We've got to get back.
It also becomes a soldier's habit to kill.
What is the matter with you, Jerry?
Just one little shot.
Jerry, you have gone crazy.
One little shot.
Jerry, put down that gun.
I won't miss. I just draw back the hammer like this.
Jerry, don't do it.
I set the trigger. Aim into the sight carefully like this. And I bring my finger ever so slowly to the hair trigger and... commanding officer.
And whosoever liveth and believeth in me shall never die. I know that my Redeemer
lives. Those are the words of the burial service. Who are they burying?
And though his body be destroyed, yet shall I see God.
That huge explosion. That's it.
We brought
an enemy shell must have hit the frame of the shed Ransom and I was standing on, just as I was about to pull the trigger of my rifle.
The Lord gave and the Lord hath taken away. Blessed be the name of the Lord. May the Lord receive the soul of Jerome Searing.
They're burying me.
Amen.
No. It can't be. No. It must not be.
Someone once called life a means to an end. An end that sooner or later catches up with all of us. Someone else compared life to a cup of tea. The more deeply we drink of it, the more quickly we reach the dregs. For Private Jerome Searing, the question has become, is the cup still full? Is he still alive? Or by an accident of fate, has he been forced to drain the cup to the very bottom? I shall return shortly with Act Two.
Now, True Value Hardware stores offer a 7-piece set of durable glass ovenware for just about the same price you'd expect to pay for just one or two pieces. Hi, Pat Summerall to tell you their January bargain of the month is a glass-baked potluck bacon-served set for just $7.77. You get two casseroles with lids, a loaf pan, a square dish, and an oblong dish. Each piece is oven-proof and dishwasher-safe, too. And the gleaming white glass blends in beautifully with any table setting. The glass bake 7-piece bacon serve set is just $7.77 while supplies last as the bargain of the month at participating True Value hardware stores. That True Value name, by the way, is important because it's not just a sign over a door, it's a promise. A promise that True Value hardware stores keep with brand name merchandise, helpful service, and sensible prices only independent businessmen working together can afford to offer. Get the most for your money when you shop at the store that lives up to its name, your True Value hardware store.
Hi, this is Tony Orlando.
And Dawn. Selma and Joyce.
Talking to the...
Tony Orlando and Dawn are talking to people who have found bright new careers by going to technical school. Tony?
I'd like to introduce you to a gentleman by the name of Mark Beveridge. Mark, what were your plans when you left high school?
I didn't have any plans.
Mark had no skills and did dead-end laboring work until he spent 2 years in a technical school.
And what do you do now?
I work in a research lab building lasers.
If you don't like the work you do, learn to do the work you like. Get a free Tony Orlando record. You can be more than you are. And the facts on how you can learn to do the work you like at technical school. Write Careers, Box 111, Washington, D.C., 20044.
Technical school seems like a good idea for a young man, Mark.
Yes, it sure was for me.
This was a public service announcement of this station, the U.S. Office of Education, and the Advertising Council.
When that day comes, as it must to all men, when we have drawn our last breath, will there be some signal, some way of knowing that the end indeed has come? Or do we, as Jerome Searing may be doing, settle for the idea that our whole life is a kind of dream within a dream, from which we are awakened by death itself?
I finally managed to open my eyes. I saw a patch of gray sky rising from a fringe on top of the trees. In the foreground, there was a crazy crisscross pattern of heavy, black, straight lines that blacked out part of the sky. I felt drained, exhausted. Once more, I shut my eyes. I heard what seemed to be the rhythmic breaking of waves upon a beach. Over it, I could hear a familiar voice, repeating over and over again,
"Jerome Searing. Jerome Searing. You are caught. Caught. Like a rat in a trap. A rat in a trap. A rat in a trap."
And then I heard something else. What's that? Who is that? Who is it? Walking there above my head.
It's me, Jerry.
Marion.
Your wife, Jerry.
Why are you here?
I came to mourn at your grave.
My grave?
To add my weight and the weight of our child to the weight of the earth upon your breast.
Why are you saying these things, Marion?
Why did you throw your life away?
I've done no such thing.
The brave Private Jerome Searing. Young, handsome, intelligent. A good father, a good husband. Those are the things you were, Jerry. Now you're a hero. A dead hero.
I don't believe you.
You don't want to believe me. Open your eyes. Wide. If you can, Jerry. What do you see?
Nothing. Everything's become black. And outside of your voice up there, I hear nothing.
Then admit it, Jerry.
Admit what?
The simple fact that you are dead. That you are buried. That I am up here, your widow, kneeling now in sorrow on your grave.
I tried to open my eyes a second time. I took a deep breath, but breathing was difficult. Everything about me was so still. And then it all came back. The shack. The retreating enemy troops. My sighting the rifle. The explosion of the Confederate artillery. And I remembered Danny. Dan? Danny! Where are you, Danny? Where are you? Are you here?
Jerry. Are you all right?
I can't see you, Dan. Where are you?
I can see you, just about. I'm over here, not more than 10 feet from you.
I hear your voice. My eyes are open, but I can't see you. I can't move. Can you, Danny?
I don't know. Very little, maybe just enough to... What's wrong, Jerry?
I'm lying here flat on my back, but on an angle. My head's a little higher than my feet, My back is supported by some kind of solid wooden beam.
You can't move at all?
Not an inch. There's another tremendous piece of timber lying right on my chest, much too heavy to move. And there's a kind of brace that joins at right angles that has me wedged against a pile of boards on my left. Can't move my left arm at all.
How about your legs?
They're straight out, I think. I've no feeling in them. My head feels as if it were being held in some kind of tight vise. I can move my eyes and my chin, but that's all. How about you, Dan?
Not quite that bad, I guess. Even if I could move, this whole mess might come down on us and make things worse than they are. The slightest move.
Yeah, you may be right, Dan.
But if we don't take that chance, we could be here forever. And nobody would ever know.
Dan, I can move the fingers of my right hand.
Anything else?
No, nothing else.
I'm going to try to move, Jerry. I've got a little support here in my back. I may be able to loosen my right leg.
Be careful, Dan.
I might just be able to push myself.
Watch it, Danny.
There. I got my hand free. Oh, geez, I'm sorry, Jerry.
You all right?
Yeah, I'm fine. You?
Well, the dirt and the rubble are up to my chin now.
Well, one thing is for sure. We can't just lie here like a couple of corpses. We've got to get out and report to headquarters.
What'd you just say, Dan?
They'll be expecting us. Headquarters will be waiting for us.
No. No, before that. You said we can't just lie here like a couple of corpses.
Well, can we? Answer me, Jerry. Can we?
As I tried to find an answer to Denny's question, once more I heard the voice of my wife, Marion. We were both standing at the mouth of Dead Man's Cave. It seemed like a thousand years ago.
Oh, we finally made it, Jerry.
Dead Man's Cave. What a climb.
Oh, I was sure once we made it past Ghost Rock, the rest would be easy.
Now, as soon as we catch our breath, we'll have a look inside. And we're going to find out why they say it's haunted.
Oh, let's rest a little first. Oh, Jerry, darling. You know there's going to be a war.
It looks that way.
Promise me one thing.
If I can.
Wait until your time comes. Don't volunteer. Let's have as much time together as we can before you feel you have to go.
I can't promise that.
Why not? Oh, please, Jerry.
Because I've already volunteered yesterday.
Oh, Jerry, you don't have the remotest idea of the meaning of the word fear, do you? Jerry! Those shots are coming from inside Dead Man's Cave.
Who's in there? Whoever you are, come out of there. I'm going in to see.
Wait, Jerry. Look up at the mouth of the cave.
What is that? A huge ring of black metal is forming a circle around the entrance.
Let's get out of here.
It's like looking into the muzzle of a giant rifle. Who are you in there? Answer me. You answer me.
Private Jerome Searing, you are caught. Caught like a rat in a trap. Like a rat in a trap. 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 Trap.
Point, I found myself staring into two beady red little eyes. They came closer and closer. They became larger and larger. I was staring into the eyes of an oversized rat that must have lived in the shed where we were standing on before it collapsed. Get away. You've no business here. The creature scampered away.
We're alive, all right. Why we should be, I hardly know, after practically the whole world fell down on us. We're alive, no question about it.
What makes you so sure?
Well, you hear me, don't you?
Yeah, I hear you.
The dead have no voices, Jerry. I'm alive, and you're alive. And we've got to find some way to get out of here. Are you in pain?
There may be something wrong with my right hand. There's a sharp, smarting pain there.
Can you move your fingers? Try to work them.
They feel wet and slippery. I can't see the hand, but I know the sensation. It's running blood. I must have ripped it on a piece of metal where the shed collapsed. How long do you think we've been in here, Dan?
I haven't any idea.
Seconds? Minutes? Possibly hours?
Oh, it couldn't have been too long. The dust is still settling. There's still dust in the air.
The way I'm held by these beams, I can't see.
Whatever we're going to do, Jerry, we'd better get some rest first. We'll need every ounce of strength we've got.
That's a good idea, Dan.
Some of our boys are sure to stray out here. Either foraging or maybe even looking for us.
Yes, yes, of course. And they'll find us, too. Somebody will surely find us.
Private Searing, I'm glad I found you.
Yes, sir.
What took you so long?
Well, sir, just as we were about to return to headquarters...
Yes?
There was this explosion. Everything collapsed, sir.
And that's the sum total of your intelligence report?
No, sir. The enemy has started to retreat. They're moving southeast toward the river. There must be at least 2,000 of them. I should judge they began their retreat about 2 hours ago.
Fine work, Searing. Excellent. I'll see that you're properly rewarded. Your country will be very proud of you.
Yes, thank you, sir. And now, would it be possible to get us out of here? We can't stay here like this forever.
You won't have to, Searing.
Thank you, sir.
Sooner or later, you'll be taken out.
Sooner or later?
There's nothing we can do at this moment, Private. Too many other things to do. Priorities.
You mean you're going to let me stay here?
Sorry, Private Searing, there's a war going on. Too many other things to do, too many other things.
You leave me here, and I'm as good as dead. As good as dead. Dead. As good as dead.
Jerry, wake up. Wake up, what's wrong?
I must have been dreaming. How long was I asleep?
I no idea. I dozed off a bit, too.
Oh, if I could only get this right hand free. Then I could try to get this piece of timber off my chest. Oh, but there's not a chance.
Jerry, I think some of this junk has moved. It begins to look as though I might have the faintest chance of getting some of this stuff off of me. Can you move at all, Jerry?
No, not as much as a hair. Except for the fingers of my right hand. Dan?
Yeah?
The strangest thing. I couldn't see it before, but now that the sun has risen, everything's a whole lot clearer.
What are you talking about? But
there's something inches away from my forehead. Pointed right at it.
What kind of thing?
I'm not sure. It's something like a ring of black shining metal. Right in front of my eyes.
How big can you see?
It's so close, it's hard to tell. I think I know what it is, Danny. It's my rifle.
What?
It's the muzzle of my rifle. The barrel's being held in place by the debris and rubbish. The gun is still cocked, just as it was when I was about to fire it. The slightest movement, the slightest touch on the trigger will set it off. And it's aimed at the exact center of my forehead.
Do you remember the story of the ancient Greek Damocles, who was invited to a sumptuous banquet? As he dined, without a care in the world, he happened to look up above his head to discover a sharp-edged sword dangling by a single hair directly over his head. His host had placed it there to impress Damocles with the dangerous nature of life itself. Private Jerome Searing finds that his life is hanging by the same sort of fragile thread. The outcome? I'll return shortly with Act 3.
In case you've forgotten how much fun driving can be, Buick would like to introduce you to Skylark, a small car that's all Buick, with room, comfort, and an engine that no other compact car in America offers, the incredible Buick V6. Skylark, it's free spirit made practical.
Now, people Magazine's year-end double issue is here with the 25 most intriguing people of the year. From Betty Ford to Dolly Parton, from Woody to Cher, Patty Hearst to Jerry Brown. They're all here in this special double issue of People, the winners and losers of 75, and people to watch for in 76. Jacqueline Streisand, Katharine Hepburn and Audrey II, Doris Day and Rudolf Nureyev, plus a squad of Olympic hopefuls and a line of first ladies in waiting. It's the biggest, most exciting issue of People ever. Pick up a copy today.
I have a heart that goes bump, bump. And sometimes I can hear it thump. And Daddy says that in my chest, I have two things that are the best. They call them lungs, for breathing air. You never see them, but they're there. And if I breathe in air that's clean, I'll grow up like a jumping bean. Whenever I see any smoke, I'll run away before I choke. And something even better yet, I'll never smoke a cigarette. I'll breathe the air that's clean and free, so I can keep on being me.
Clear the smoke from your family image and from your lungs. And remember, your kids may never start if you stop. Quitting is tough, but your lung association says it's a matter of life and breath.
Ambrose Bierce, the author of One of the Missing, cynically defined man as an animal so lost in contemplation of what he thinks he is that he tends to overlook what he really ought to be. And among man's chief occupations, he added, is the extermination of other animals, his own species included. With his loaded rifle pointed at his head, unable to move, and having lost all sense of the passing of time, Private Jerome Searing's chief occupation is to find some way of preventing his accidental extermination by his own hand.
Jerry? Jerry, are you awake?
Yeah, I'm awake.
You all right?
The barrel of my rifle seems to be closer to my head than it was before. I can't breathe for fear of setting it off. I'm afraid to move.
How's your hand?
It's still losing blood. It's begun to throb, a slow, regular pulsation, each one sharper than the one before.
Now that we've rested a bit, we'll figure something out.
Dan.
What is it?
That rat that was here before. It's come back again.
It won't harm you, I'm sure.
It's slowly making its way up the wooden stock of the rifle. Its eyes are looking straight into mine as it moves forward. Now it's sniffing around the hair trigger. Dan, what do I do?
Just keep still. Don't move.
If its nose or tail so much as touches the trigger, I'm not afraid to die, Dan. But not this way. Not like this.
He was not afraid to live dangerously. He was not afraid to die.
What was I hearing? Where was that voice coming from?
Private Jerome Searing, cut off from his fellows by an accident of destiny, did not fear to yield to the ultimate act of courage that brought him to his fatal end.
Those words made no sense. I was not dead. Yet, I was still very much alive. And all the time, I listened to the drone of that voice. I kept my eyes glued onto that loathsome little animal that was sniffing its slow way up along the rifle stock. A flick of its tail, and I'd be gone. And suddenly it stopped, turned around, scampered off. With the free fingers of my torn and bleeding hand, moving nothing else but my eyes, I groped for whatever might be in reach. Dan! Dan, something's happened.
What is it?
My fingers have touched a strip of board, a building lath of some kind. I can just barely touch it.
Where is it, Jerry?
Right alongside my body. I can just bend my elbow as much as an inch. I think I might be able to get hold of it with the tips of my fingers.
Well, if you can do that,
then I might be able to work it upward. That's to say, backward, toward me. far enough to lift the end of it and try to push the rifle away from my head.
Try, Jerry. You've got to try.
The worst happens, and I can't push the gun away, if it's wedged too tightly into the ground, I can always try to touch the strip of board to the trigger itself.
What kind of solution is that?
It may be the only one that's left, Danny. My fingers reached out for the length of wood. Slowly, the real world began to come into focus once again. Here in this confusion of timber and boards, this was the sole universe. The only thing that was, here was immortality in time. Forever and ever.
Jerry, something's happened over here.
What?
If I'm very careful, I think I may be able to loosen some more of this stuff around me. I'm going to push down with my hands, very gently, against the ground, and come out backwards. I hope.
A stone, a pebble, a clump of earth dropped against this trigger would be the end of me. Or maybe of both of us.
I know that, Jerry. I'll be as careful as I can.
Wait a minute. Wait a minute. If by some miracle you can get out of this mess without sending a bullet through the middle of my head, you leave me here just as I am while you hurry back to headquarters, is that it?
I didn't say that.
Not in so many words. Then you deliver to the captain the intelligence report of the enemy movements that you observed, that you discovered, and you, Private Ransom, great hero that you are promoted in the field and become Lieutenant Ransom. Is that it, Danny?
I don't know what you're talking about.
Meantime, poor unfortunate Private Searing lies buried under this pile of garbage with the inside of his head scattered all over the place. Too bad. Just one of the missing...
If any of what you're saying were true, Jerry, just exactly what could you do to prevent it?
At the moment, not a blessed thing. I suppose if this rifle of mine should go off while you're getting out of here, you might call it an accident of fate, wouldn't you?
What would you call it, Private Searing?
I would call it plain and simple murder. For a moment in time, there was nothing. I must have blacked out. Soon I found myself trembling in every fiber of my body, drenched in my own sweat. Dan? Danny? There was no answer. Of course, Danny had managed to escape. Well, hadn't he? And a terrifying thought gripped my mind. Who was I calling? Danny? Danny Ransom? In a flash of clarity, it came to me. I had never in my life even known a Danny Ransom. How could he answer me? There is no Danny. There never was a Danny. Danny was a creation of my own fevered imagination. From the very beginning, I was sent out on this mission alone.
Detail, halt! Men, we've now spent two whole days in search of Private Searing. We've not been able to find a single trace of him.
I'm here, Captain. Right here.
Having done everything within our power to find him or his body with no success, I feel that we would be justified in calling off the search.
You can't do that. I'll die if you leave me, and you're so close.
We'll return to quarters. Howard! Hark!
Dad! Danny! No. I've forgotten. There's no Danny. But if he had never existed... At least Marion did. My wife was no invention. If I could only be with her, this whole nightmare would go away.
Who are you?
Marion, it's me, Jerry. I've come home from the war.
You've changed, sir. I didn't recognize you. Is the war ended?
For me, it is.
Why have you come here?
This is my home. You're my wife.
Why have you come?
Take me back, Marion. Let me come home.
I cannot. Too many things have changed. You'll have to excuse me now. It's begun to rain.
Don't leave me.
I have so many things to do. Please don't try to stop me. I'm due somewhere. Somewhere very important.
Where do you have to go?
This bouquet of flowers. Very important. Goodbye, Jerome.
I'm going to go with you, wherever it is.
If you like, Jerome. If you like.
Where are we, Marion?
Don't you recognize the place? It's the old burial ground next to the church. Would you like to stand under my umbrella? The rain is coming down harder.
No, I'm fine the way I am.
In recognition of his devotion to his country above and beyond the call of duty.
What's he doing here? He's no reason to...
Shh, quiet, Jerome. The captain is speaking.
It is my honor and privilege on this solemn occasion to bestow upon his widow, Marion, his country's acknowledgement of its gratitude in the form of this Medal of Honor awarded posthumously. Mrs. Searing, will you kindly step forward?
Stop, Marion. Stop what you're doing. All of you. There's been a mistake. A huge mistake.
I was alone again, buried in the rubble. Alone. Except maybe for the rats. The fingers of my torn hand reach out for the strip of wood I had discovered. But somewhere the piece of wood met some kind of an obstruction. Was not able to touch the trigger. The black mouth of that rifle is still growing sharper and sharper. I can already feel the track of the bullet burning its way into my head. 6 o'clock? Morning? Evening? What difference does it make? Oh, come on, Han, do something. Get that stick to touch off the trigger of the rifle. Good, Anne, good. Now touch the trigger. Stick. Touch it. What happened? I set the trigger off, but there's been no shot. No! No! No!
Sir?
The squad ready?
Yes, Captain.
This will be our final attempt to locate Private Searing. Alive, if he's still alive. Or dead.
I understand, sir.
Well, let me see now. It's exactly 1 minute past 6 a.m. Note that, won't you, for the report? And the date is...
6th of July, Captain.
6th of July. I sent him out on the 30th. He's been gone a week.
Well, the chances of finding him alive.
Now, what was that? Look through your field glasses, Sergeant. Over in that direction. Now, what do you see?
That old shack we've had under observation. The dust is still rising. Must have just collapsed. That was the noise we heard.
There are no shots. No explosion of any kind.
Seems to have fallen by itself. It's a complete wreck.
That's interesting. Well, while we're looking for Searing, we might take a quick look at it. Sergeant. Sergeant, will you come here, please? Look there.
Is that him?
I almost didn't recognize him. He's so covered with dust. I've seen a good many dead men. None ever with a face of that color.
Cheeks have fallen in, the temples are sunken.
Look at the mouth, the upper lip pulled back, showing his clenched teeth. Here, give me a hand here. Let's try to get him out.
Here we go.
Yeah, that was easier than I thought it would be. The body, outside of the right hand, seems to be in excellent shape.
Though bones appear to be broken.
Help me turn him over.
Yeah. Yep.
Not a sign of any kind of a gun wound any place on the body. Do you see any?
No, sir, none at all.
There's his rifle. May I have it, please?
Thank you.
It's strange.
What's that, Captain?
There's no shell in the chamber of the rifle. Not even a spent one. Searing's gun was not loaded. That's peculiar.
Very strange. Such a good soldier.
What would you suppose was the cause of death?
It's hard to say. Maybe simple starvation or thirst or a combination of both. After all, he's been dead a week. What time do you have, Sergeant?
6:18, sir.
Remember that for the report.
Yes, sir.
And have your men carry the body back to camp. We'll give this soldier a burial befitting one of the bravest men our country will ever know.
You were right, Captain. In my first excitement, good soldier that I was supposed to be, I did forget to load my rifle. I remember that now. So my fears as I lay there in the rubble with the gun pointed at my head were groundless. But you're wrong, Captain, about everything else. I have not been dead a week, Captain. I have been dead just a bare 18 minutes. You should have noticed that my body is still warm, and I did not die of starvation or of thirst. This brave soldier, this formidable warrior, died as much as he did from anything else. Of fear. The fear of dying.
We know that the feeling of love and the feeling of hatred are very often confused. That the line that separates our feelings of love and hatred can be a very thin one. By the same token, the distinction between fear and courage can be equally narrow. When we think a person is motivated by the noblest kind of courage and bravery, it might just be possible that the driving factor is nothing more than fear, as in the case of Private Jerome Searing. I'll be back shortly.
First, the good news about the treatment of cancer. Through chemotherapy, which is the use of anti-cancer drugs to lessen pain and lengthen life for many, great progress has been made. Through chemotherapy, a child with leukemia, a woman with breast cancer, a senior citizen with a tumor, can bring a normal balance to their daily lives. Now the bad news. More research is desperately needed to find newer, even more effective anti-cancer drugs, and more programs to bring those treatments to everyone who needs help. You can be part of that research. You can be part of that help. Send a check today to the Chemotherapy Foundation. That's Chemo, C-H-E-M-O, Therapy Foundation, Box 8, New York, New York, 10028. That's the Chemotherapy Foundation, Box 8, New York, New York, 10028. This is Bess Meyerson with a public service message from the Chemotherapy Foundation.
An interesting footnote. Ambrose Bierce, author of this story, volunteered as a private in the Indiana Infantry at the outbreak of the Civil War in 1861. He served for the entire duration of the war, was twice wounded, once in the heel, and once more severely in the head. This occurred in the same battle of Kennesaw Mountain, which was the setting of our tale. I wonder if Bierce's head wound could have had anything to do with Jerome Searing's difficulties. Our cast included Christopher Tabori, Jennifer Harmon, Arnold Moss, and Mason Adams. The entire production was under the direction of Hyman Brown. And now, a preview of our next tale.
Meg, I've got to resolve this puzzle. Will you help me?
Of course, Terry.
Then try to get to the library tomorrow and look at back issues of London newspapers or periodicals for 1810. Find out if there was a Lord Millbrook and a Lady Sybil. Did he have a friend named Seward? Was a man, a vagrant, convicted for the woman's murder? Will you do that for me?
Certainly, darling.
Really research it, Meg. As Ben pointed out, cases at law are decided by evidence. I don't have any. All I've got is a picture in my mind of a murder and of an innocent man being hanged for the crime. It's a very long time ago. But the same crime has been repeated. If there's any substance to what I've seen in my mind's eye, I'm going to defend the man now being accused of murder.
Radio Mystery Theater was sponsored in part by True Value Hardware Stores and Buick Motor Division. This is E.G. Marshall inviting you to return to our Mystery Theater for another adventure in the macabre. Until next time, pleasant dreams.
This is KOIN, Portland. The time, 12 midnight.
CBS News. The Muslim New Year has begun in Beirut with a relatively quiet day, but there were incidents overnight with the state-run radio warning the streets were unsafe after dark. Good morning. I'm Mike Stanley reporting on the CBS Radio Network. The public holiday commemorating Hijra, the Prophet Muhammad's flight from Mecca in 622 A.D., is expected to keep people off the streets of the Lebanese capital, thus lessening the chance of renewed clashes. Volleys of automatic fire were heard around midnight, but most were assumed to be fired in connection with the Muslim New Year festivities rather than as a continuation of fighting between warring political and religious factions. Security forces are trying to obtain the release of kidnapped victims abducted at the so-called flying roadblock set up at various points in the city. Such kidnappings in the past 9 months invariably provoked retaliatory violence. New violence last night in Portugal, the first there in 6 weeks. Paramilitary Republican Guard shot and killed 3 demonstrators in the northern city of Oporto. The victims were identified as 1 West German and 2 Portuguese. They report of a crowd of leftist demonstrators who tried to force their way into a military prison to protest the continued detention there of about 100 people allegedly involved in last November's left-wing military rebellion. None of those detained at the prison has been charged formally. CBS News continues following this message.
And I invent a great machine that stands 6 mountains high, and it will bring down all fresh air that floats up in the sky. Because Dad and Mom keep saying that the air down here is chunky, and sometimes even I can see it's getting very smoky. Then I invent another machine, the best one ever yet. And that machine will eat up every smoking cigarette. And then we all breathe fresher air. And all grow up much stronger. I wish I could invent them now, instead of waiting longer. It's a matter of life and death.
Denials have been issued by both the White House and the State Department, labeling as totally without foundation a report some American ex-GIs and South Vietnamese are being recruited into what's called the CIA's Undercover Army for Angola. The Christian Science Monitor, in a front-page story, says that some 300 Americans are already operating within Angola, having left the United States within the past 3 months or so. The Monitor said it was told a second group underwent a refresher course at Fort Benning, Georgia, last week. Deputy Information Officer John Gowes told CBS News reporter Bernard Goldberg that just wasn't so.
No one in any responsible position at Fort Benning has any knowledge of such training. We've trained only our own National Guard and Reserve people, and certainly we have trained no mixed group of mercenaries.
That's a flat denial. I mean, that
is the flat denial.
So you're not saying that it's possible and you just don't know about it?
It did not happen.
Fort Benning, Georgia, Infantry Headquarters Deputy Information Officer John Gowes. Pro-Western forces battling Soviet-backed rivals for supremacy in Angola have appealed to the United States to restore the military aid cut off by the Senate 2 weeks ago. One spokesman for the nationalist group said that the cutoff of aid shows Western nations are unreliable friends. House Ways and Means Oversight Subcommittee Chairman Charles Bannock believes income tax reporting should be staggered, changing the present April 15th deadline for all taxpayers.
When all of this work must be concluded by a certain given day of the year, like the 15th of April, it just strains every resource of the Internal Revenue Service to deal with that one day. And if there were a way of spreading this work out, for example, throughout a 12-month period, it would mean that the work would operate with considerably less pressure, with considerably less manpower, and probably give the public a great deal more help.
Vanek has asked that suggestions for how best to establish a staggered tax reporting system be sent to his House subcommittee. Now this.
The time, 1856. The ship USS Supply, commanded by Lieutenant David Dixon Porter, sailed from Smyrna, Egypt, with perhaps the most unique cargo ever carried on a naval vessel. This is James Drury with Navy Chronicle. The cargo was purchased under congressional appropriation to be employed for military purposes. The cargo, 50 Egyptian camels. Secretary of War Jefferson Davis believed camels could speed troop movements in the Southwest due to their stamina in hot weather. The camels were unloaded at Powderhorn, Texas in May of 1856 and were used with varying degrees of success, even later hauling bales of cotton for the Confederates during the Civil War. But soldiers and camels regard each other with suspicion, so they were eventually sold out of the military. Some of them were bought by a circus, some were turned loose in Arizona. A few were even seen as late as 1905. Camels from Egypt were brought over, and the Navy was there.
You've been listening to Navy Chronicle, an historical series with James Drury and the U.S. Navy Band.
Mamie Eisenhower, the 79-year-old widow of former President Dwight Eisenhower, is showing improvement in her battle against a viral infection that hospitalized her at Walter Reed Army Medical Center. Army doctors report Mrs. Eisenhower is alert and resting comfortably. Mike Stanley, CBS News.
6 minutes after 12 midnight on a Friday morning on Coin 97, my name's Bill Garrity. I'll have local news for you at 12:30. Good morning.
K-O-I-N.